From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the fourth day of September 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlo at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Krista Swanson, part of the Farm Doc Daily team, will be here to discuss harvest cost and operations. You'll want to stay with us for that. And then as we close out our time together, we'll take up the agricultural weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Two things as we get started for the afternoon. First, Commodity Week is up on the website right now. Our panelists for the week included Dan Zwicker, Mike Zuzlo, and Ellen Dearden. You can listen to the whole of that program on many of these radio stations over the weekend, on our home station in the second half hour this afternoon, and of course online at WILLAG.org. And it's Labor Day weekend. I'm a bit of a COVID-19 pragmatic. Here's a cautionary tale for you. I know you'll probably want to get together with a lot of folks, but about 3 weeks from now, you might regret that just about the same time you're headed to the field. Don't put yourself in a situation that could cause a problem. Chicago corn for the day up 2 3/4, settled at $3.47 and a quarter on this Friday afternoon. December new crop up 4 1/4 at $3.58, and the March up 3 3/4, $3.68.5 the settlement price. And July futures 3 1/4 higher at $3.79 1/4. Soybean futures nearby September 3 1/4 higher, $9.69.5 the settlement. November at $9.68 up to January, $9.73.5 1 1/4 higher in the March, up a penny at $9.73 3/4. July, $9.78 1 1/4 higher. The bean oil down 39 cents. Bean meal up 4.60. And wheat futures in the July soft red down 2 at $5.61.5. Live cattle futures 52.5 higher in the October. Feeders were up a nickel, and lean hogs on the day up 57.5 cents. We're now joined by Mike Zuzlo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, to help us take a look at what happened in Chicago. Hey, thanks, Mike, for being with us, and thanks, too, for doing the Commodity Week program yesterday.
Nice show as usual, Todd, and before we get started, I hope you and all the great listeners out there have a wonderful Labor Day, and be very safe out there as we get ready to go.
Hey, thank you so much for that, and you have a good Labor Day as well. So let's start in on what happened in Chicago today. At the end of the day, we managed to close higher both in corn and soybeans.
Yeah, it was a neat dynamic because the trade is wanting to keep a weather premium in this market, but I don't think it's just a weather premium. I think it's a demand premium as well. And I say that, Todd, ahead of next Friday's WASDE report, because the beginning of this week, we saw the weekly export inspections come out. And even with a drop in crop conditions, the weekly export inspections were negative enough demand-wise that the trade wanted to pull back and wanted to pull back in a decent amount. And the charts looked pretty cut up after Monday afternoon. Well, we fast forward to Thursday morning and we saw the weekly export sales. And as we talked about on this week's Commodity Week, the demand was really, really strong. And we see this in a lot of the commodities right now, livestock and grains, and we see it mainly at the heart of China's purchases. And so now we've got this dynamic where the export river market, terminal market, is extremely strong going into harvest, whereas the ethanol and some of the feedlot and some of the crusher bids for soy are not nearly as strong as what we've been used to the last 3 to 5 years. And so we've got kind of a COVID footprint on what's happening between the ethanol slowing down and the Chinese coming in and buying a lot more than normal from us. So the Thursday weekly export sales being strong kind of changed the whole dynamic again, and the trade elected at that point in the row crops at least to believe that we needed to keep a premium in the market. Why would that be? Because these higher prices have not discouraged the Chinese nor the Philippines when it comes to buying soy meal on Friday morning from the United States, nor has it discouraged the Egyptians from continuing to buy a lot of Russian wheat. I think Russia's exports year to date are ahead something like 40 or 60% from where they were last year at this time. So it, for a change, we're keeping a premium in the market as we head into that next USDA report.
It feels like good news, even going into a long holiday weekend, which sometimes can be a little treacherous on the backside coming out, but demand is demand, and we won't have anything to change that, until next week, I suppose.
Yeah, that's right. We'll get a Monday export inspections number again. I will say there is some caution out there that I think we need to be thinking about. Not only are we pricing in some yield decline, and I think that's a fair assessment, especially after the IHS numbers came out around lunchtime. We saw the corn really turn on a little bit better price action and shorts cover. But you've got three things that are starting to work against you, beginning to be headwinds that have been very good tailwinds for us. Number one is crude oil. It is not going to finish the week very well, and OPEC is starting to pump up the volume. The dollar looks like a buy signal in the daily charts to me, and the euro currency looks like a sell signal in the charts to me. And I think there's some fundamentals that would support that mindset based upon some of the employment data and some of the other data we got economically this week. And then probably the most important for me is the wheat market. We have a wetter hard red wheat plains belt rainfall forecast in the next 10 days. Really, if it comes, it'll come right in the nick of time for wheat producers. In fact, a client just texted me right before we went on the air here and said he's out in near Hays, Kansas, and said, please send us some rain. And he's saying that because we're getting ready to plant. So the dollar and the wheat together and the crude oil and the dollar together, those tend to play a pretty big role in our markets. So I would say there are headwinds out there at the end of this week that we haven't had to face for the last few.
Yeah, meaning there would be some pressure on the market if those were all to come to fruition, meaning the dollar going higher and lack of rainfall in Kansas and some of the growing areas for wheat.
Yeah, exactly right. It puts more burden on the USDA report to kind of feed that demand bull. And that's really what we're looking at, is feeding the demand bull and not rising increasing the supplies too much.
So does feeding the demand bull on Friday morning mean that the numbers don't change on demand for corn or soybeans?
Exactly. And we kind of hit this on Commodity Week as well, because if the USDA is going to lower harvested acres and yield, they'll probably lower demand. Well, the question is how much? And at the end of the day on Friday, what really matters is U.S. ending stocks of corn, beans, and wheat, and global ending stocks of corn, beans, and wheat. So it's not really as much the yield or ethanol or exports. It's all of them together, because I think at this point the trade, based upon my price model, would say if you go above a 2.5 billion bushel carryover or a 500 million bushel bean carryover, you're going to disappoint the bull and you're going to disappoint the trade, and you'll probably have some pressure, especially if we start kickstarting those combines and start seeing some corn shelled and some beans cut.
At that point, you just don't want the market to turn and go the other direction, especially in the middle of harvest.
That's a great point. Seasonality is key, so you have to fight that seasonality.
Anything else on the livestock side before I let you go?
You know, livestock, I've had a lot of cattle clients. I pulled hedges this week in feeders, thinking that we've done enough damage. Cash fats at $100, $101, that's, I think, low enough to keep the bid going. The key now is a COVID vaccine. I think if we want a cattle rally and a trend shift, we get a COVID vaccine that's effective, and I think then we can start talking about tailgating, college football, pro football, these major institutions, colleges coming back full bore and really opening up a lot of demand. I saw a story really briefly on how people are buying airline meals for a $2 an airline meal on the web, and they're buying, you know, something like 50 or 100 at a time. So this is kind of where we're at with the institutional demand, and that's really a key factor, especially for the beef.
Hey, thank you so much, and we'll talk with you next week.
Sounds great, Todd.
It's Mike Zuzulo. He's with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Krista Swanson, part of the Farm Doc team here at the University of Illinois. Hi, Krista. Thanks for being with us. You and a few others of the team members put together a piece in this past week about combines and harvesting in particular, and trying to figure out what really works and what the values might be and the economics behind it. Can you tell me a little bit about that, please?
Yeah, so we looked at harvest operations, so combines plus grain carts and trucking, kind of the steps, the equipment needed for those processes, and looking at what it, you know, the maybe the acres that it would take to justify ownership versus outsourcing, and then talk through some of the other types of challenges that someone might face if they're looking into outsourcing, and just basically the whole package of considerations that one has in thinking about their equipment line for harvest on their farm.
There had to be just a myriad of things to consider and probably several different answers, I would think, along the way.
Yeah, there definitely is not a one-size-fit-all. And honestly, this article doesn't even touch some of the other considerations that a person might have. This kind of just focuses really on getting the task done and doesn't really go beyond that. But of course, there are, some farms might, have plans to do their own fall field work after harvest. And, so then there's added desire to get harvest done in a timely manner. I mean, everyone wants to get harvest done in a timely manner. But, if you have plans for those types of things later in the fall, before the end of the year, then, you have some of those. So this article doesn't even get into some of those types of things. It's really just looking at it uses the farm dock machinery use as economic costs and kind of compares those to Iowa State does a survey of custom operators and people who hire custom operators. And so that's importantly, that's different than the farm dock machinery use economic costs. The farm dock costs are intended to truly represent the actual cost to operate that machinery. So looking at overhead and depreciation and interest and labor and those factors, whereas the Iowa State rates are actual rates being charged or paid in the current year. So it kind of gives you this comparison of this is essentially what it's costing me per acre to run my machinery during harvest versus, kind of the range of what custom operators are charging or being paid.
Were there any takeaways from that comparison?
I think that, so a couple takeaways, really the cost, the economic cost of running a combine is very similar. It's right there in the range of the average and median custom rate. So one thing that tells me is that if you have the most important thing in considering a combine is making sure that it's appropriately sized for your acres. And in the article from Tuesday, September 1st, you can find links to more details on that as far as, for how many acres would to keep that economic cost at a flat level, how does that fluctuate depending on the size of combine compared to the acres? So that's kind of one important thing. If you're keeping that in line, then and you have the labor available to do it yourself, then, I think you can completely justify doing it. Smaller farms may want to look into hiring a custom operator or a neighbor. As far as the grain cart, one thing that's interesting on that is that the custom rates were all considerably lower, even the maximum, than the economic cost. However, it's not really all that feasible to, there's custom harvesters, people who do custom combining and stuff, but finding a custom grain cart operator isn't as readily available. So I think that's something where, again, just making sure that you have the right size for your farm. And then I guess the other thing, talking about grain hauling, really the custom rates and the economic costs on grain hauling are equal. And so that is maybe the simplest thing to outsource if you're short on labor or, you know, that's one thing that I think a lot of farms take into account is that if you're a little short on labor, then you that's a good way to get, you know, an extra person, and you're not really spending any more money than what it would cost to be doing that yourself. And you've got an extra person. And of course, as with anything, there's some challenges. You know, if you hire a truckie, may not be as easy to find if you're wanting to go to your own bin site versus to, you know, another outlet. So it's like I said, no one size fits all approach, just a lot of things to consider. And especially in these times, I think an important thing to evaluate.
Thank you, Krista. Krista Swanson is part of the Farm Dog Daily team here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can see the article she and her colleagues penned about the cost of harvest on the Farm Dog website at farmdogdaily.illinois.edu. On this Friday, Eric Snodgrass now joins us from Nutrient Ag Solutions in Agribolt to discuss the weather forecast. Hi, Eric. It's just a gorgeous day here in our hometown and in East Central Illinois. I'm going to thank you for that because most of the time you probably get blamed. So.
Yeah, I'll take all the credit for days like this, but none of the credit when it rains during harvest.
Well, so today is beautiful, but what about the weekend? Any trouble spots?
There might be, and it'll be to our north and possibly to our west. So we're going to watch one area, really across the whole country, just one area to keep an eye on for Saturday. Chances from storms in Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, cutting through northern Illinois. So we're going to watch that. Right now, the Storm Prediction Center's even got a slight risk out for that area. They've had it there for 2 days now, so pretty robust. But other than that, that's really it for the weekend, and we've got some pretty pleasant weather coming our way for the next few days.
Dry, then. For how long?
Well, it's going to be dry until we get to the day 4 through day 7 forecast. So I'm talking next week after we get past this weekend. Some big changes are on the way. And those changes are going to be significant for some places around the country.
Well, you know, I've been hearing the rumblings of, in parts of the country, frost, cold.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, just I'll say this. I'm glad that we live where we live in this event, because if you were back farther to the west, things are going to be quite crazy. So this morning I was giving a talk to a group in Nebraska, and we were talking about what they're going to experience. So from Nebraska to Colorado, there will be high temperatures tomorrow on Saturday and on Sunday. They're going to get deep into the 90s and possibly in certain parts of Colorado and Nebraska going over 100 degrees. Well, following this, coming out on Sunday afternoon and then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is some really cold air. In fact, I did some back trajectories on that cold air. It is currently sitting over parts of the Canadian archipelago. So that's in the Arctic, and it's on its way south. And as it cuts through, we might see temperature swings upwards of 50 to 60 degrees. So there's concern now about frost. And so the high plains, especially maybe getting some frost out of this, I'm talking western Nebraska, Wyoming, that area, they will be in the 30s through North Dakota, South Dakota for the overnight lows Tuesday morning and Wednesday morning. And this might extend into northern Minnesota. Now, we ask ourselves, is that really that anomalous? Is this kind of crazy to see this kind of colder weather coming out of the prairies of Canada into this area this time of year? I looked back over the last 40 years, and generally in far western Nebraska, about a quarter of the time, they'll get a frost before September 15th. And as you go north, these type of early September frosts are more common than we think. But for here, it's, you know, it would be super rare to get a frost, and we're not even talking about it for Illinois. But it's going to be cold in those areas, and we're going to have some overnight lows that's going to make folks kind of break out the hoodies and maybe some sweatpants and for part of next week.
All right. So we talked about that. You mentioned days 4 through 7 were different. Does that come in after the cold air?
It kind of does. So it comes in on the leading edge of that cold air. So what happens is a little boundary sets up there, and this trough to our west just lingers. It takes a long time to move west to east. So we're going to have good support of moisture out of the Gulf that's going to run up and butt up against that trough, and as a result, produce potentially a multi-day rainfall event that's across parts of the central United States all the way over to the eastern Corn Belt, eventually to the eastern Corn Belt like Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania. But the potential there is to possibly rack up some decent rains here in the next 7 to 10 days.
So then what's the rest of September look like? And because you mentioned the Gulf, the hurricane season, which has been really active.
It has been very active, but thankfully most of the systems have been relatively weak, except for Hurricane Laura, of course. And right now we're watching areas off of the west coast of Africa. So the good news is I didn't say we're watching something in the Gulf of Mexico. So in the near term, we're not seeing anything kind of that could do what Laura did, which is come up the Gulf, go right there through the lower Mississippi River Valley and cause problems. But right now we only have 6 names left on our name list, right? So we have a 21 name list and we only got 6 left. So this has been, of course, what we call a hyperactive season, and I don't expect it to slow down. But don't forget, when we talk next Friday, that'll be the peak of the hurricane season, so the second half is still to come. So back in the central part of the U.S., we do see the models possibly at the end of the month, of course, moderating in temperatures, going back over toward normal, which would mean, in terms of frost for us, a normal, look for a frost. In other words, mid-October, for this part of Illinois. So I don't see anything that would upset that. But I saw some hints lately that we could be looking at maybe slightly wetter than normal pattern. Nothing like 2018 or 2019, but there were some hints at some wetter conditions as we got toward the end of September and into the beginning of October. But they're just that. They're hints, whispers in the models, nothing concrete at this point.
On the other side of the planet, if I'm not mistaken, hurricanes are called typhoons, and we've been watching a few over there as well. What do you see?
Yeah, well, there's 2 of them that are going toward the Korean Peninsula. One actually already did and is currently sitting over the Manchurian Plain. And there's another large one. It's Category 4 in strength that's going to the Manchurian Plain as well. Now, why that's important is the Manchurian Plain is where they grow a lot of corn and soybeans. And so just imagine getting very, very wet conditions here at the end of the month. And by the way, we need to watch those carefully. And here's why. Should those hurricanes recurve into the North Pacific, those typhoons, excuse me, and then set up shop kind of over the Aleutian Islands, that would reinforce the pattern we are in right now, lasting into the end of September. So I'm watching them carefully. They're the wild card in the near-term forecast.
Any impact on what's been happening in South America, or will happen in South America, more likely?
Yeah, so the La Nina is actually getting its act together. I've seen stronger trade winds. The ocean temperatures are now down to minus 0.7 degrees Celsius, which is firmly in the La Nina territory. So by most standards, you'd say that this was a developing La Nina now after a summer where it really didn't get much done. Now, why that's important, again, is that the latest long-range projections for September, the whole month of September, for Brazil's central growing areas, including Mato Grosso, are to keep it dry. I don't see the rains arriving until October. Now, the importance there is no early aggressive planting after they're allowed to start planting on September the 15th. I think they're going to have to wait till October, which will be, important for getting them on time, but not early.
Hey, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
And, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Came to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Stay with us. Commodity Week is next.